V'deber Hashem al Moshe le'emar d'rabban Yisrael, isha ki tazriya v'yoda zachar v'tama'a shivat yamim ki mei nidat dovta titma. And I'll explain some of this in a moment. Yom ha'shmini imo b'sar erlato, u'shloshim yom u'shloshet yamim teshev b'dmei tahara b'kol kodesh lo tiga v'mikdash lo tavo. So I have to stop and try to explain a little bit. And then again, it's not necessarily, other than it's the parsha and I should explain things, but it's not necessarily the time and the place to explain all of this in great detail. But I will say the following, that we had we have a woman who gives birth. And then there is this tum'ah, which we need to define. And then we have a comparison which is drawn, and that is kimei nidat dovta titma, and it's similar to nidah, but the only thing is nidah had not been mentioned yet in the Torah, so you're supposed to understand the reference by something which we have not been told yet. And then we're told that there's another 33 days, and during these days it's dmei tahara b'bekol kodesh lo tiga. So which is it? Is it Tahara or is it Tuma? But it says it's Tahara. So what's going on here? So to try to explain this, the laws of Nida, which are not referenced yet or not clearly understood yet, are actually introduced in the Torah in two separate independent sections, which means it's a law which has two different elements to it. One element is within the rubric of Tum'ah and Tahara, and I will go on to say, and then until this very day, there are repercussions that it has to do with Tum'ah and Tahara. And on the other hand, it is something which is part of the Arayot, which means the list of Arayot. It also talks about forbidden relationships, of having relationships, even if people are married, if there is a situation of Nidah. So what we have over here is a law that I'm not even going to call it a hybrid, because I'm not convinced that that's the right word. It's a law which has two different identities. It is listed within the laws of Tum'ah and Tahara, which I still want to explain. I think that the best definition of which one do we want? You want to start with Tahara or Tum'ah? I think Tum'ah creates a situation that one cannot be involved in things which are kadosh. I think that without having the word kadosh in the sentence, you can't understand the word Tum'ah. And now, what is Tahara? Tahara is when one can be involved. So therefore, if somebody is in a state of Tum'ah, and there are various types of Tum'ah, that means that that person cannot be involved in something which is Kadosh, which means it's very much of a Yikra topic. It's very much in terms of the Mishkan. It's very much in terms of Korbanot. And then you can continue Truma, Maaseh, I mean, all kinds of things. It has to do with Kedushah, which means that Tum'ah is something which can't be reconciled with Kedushah. And in order to be able to be involved in Kedushah, lack of a better word, holiness, then there needs to be a situation of Tahara. So therefore, what I'm suggesting is that the words Tum'ah and Tahara are relative to the Mishkan generally, or Kedushah, if you want a more specific term. Now, on the other hand, there is a prohibition in terms of, even if people are married, to have relations if there's a situation of nida, and that relationship is not because of the tum'ah of the mishkan type, that has to do, and by the way, here you have kedushah, you have kiddushin, you have marriage, but nonetheless, it's also considered to be part of the arayot. Now, in terms of the halachot, it's really interesting that the halacha do somehow, I don't want to use the word hybrid, that rather it fits into two different categories, but there are going to be certain laws which will come from one and certain ones from the other, including leniencies, which will exist, and as I said before, until this very day. Just for an example, that when it comes to Tum'ah and Tahara, then if blood is seen, it has to be on something which is quote-unquote called Mekabel Tum'ah. Why? Because it's a question of Tum'ah. It has to be Mekabel Tum'ah. Colored garments are not Mekabel Tum'ah. So therefore, the whole situation where sometimes people would be encouraged to wear, or if it happens to be that something was sore and something which is colored, it's not Mekabel Tum'ah. Why? That comes back from the whole laws of Mikdash, Mishkan, Tuma, and Tara, but it spills over to the other area as well. And therefore, again, somebody has to be knowledgeable in both of these and how these work together, and not everything is clearly understandable. Let's see. For example, Rav Adi Yosef will say anything which is paper is not Makabel Tuma, so therefore, again, not everybody will necessarily agree, so therefore anything that has that was seen on paper, he would just say, doesn't count, even if there's lots of reasons to believe that it should count more. And as I said, this is not necessarily the time and the place to discuss this in greater depth, but that's why this is so interesting over here, because it speaks about tuma'ah from childbirth. Now, presumably when childbirth takes place, then you're going to have blood which will be there as well, which is certainly natural childbirth, and that creates a type of tuma'ah. But afterwards you have d'mei tahara. D'mei tahara is a situation whereby this woman, after till 40 days, she can't go to the Mishkan, but she can be with her husband. So therefore, the d'mei tahara, any blood there is really considered to be from trauma and at that point, and not something which is considered to be uterine blood or blood having to do with nida. So therefore, you have this interesting situation which is suggested over here, whereby the two different aspects don't necessarily mesh completely, and therefore, in terms of relationship with a spouse, it would be permitted, assuming she doesn't try to kill you at that point. And on the other hand, when it comes to the Mishkan, it still would necessitate there to be separation. So I'm saying that is, you know, part of what's interesting about these verses. And therefore you see that there's, I'm going to stop right there. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But it does say towards the end, as we continue here, it talks about what needs to be done. Uvumlot yimei hatahara min pasuk vav, levenu levatz, tavi keves ben shnato la'ola ben yuna otor lachatat, el petach ha'omoid el hakohen, v'yikriv levnei Hashem v'chiper alev, and so on and so forth. And zot torat ha'yoledet. Okay, so over here, and at the very end, v'chiper alev hakohen v'tahara. Now, over here, it's the Kohen, it's in the Mishkan, it is something which is ritualistic, it's something which is part of Vayikra in terms of the distance or the proximity that one can have towards the Mishkan. And as we've spoken before, I mean, saying previous years about this, that this Korban, at least partially, seems to be a Korban about re-entry into Mishkan life, re-entry into a life of Kedusha vis-a-vis the Mishkan or the Korbanot and so on. In the following chapter, which is source number 2, V'deber Shem Moshe V'Aharon Lemar, Adam Kiye Ba'or B'Saro, Se'et O Se'pachat O Beheret V'Yah Ba'or B'Slo D'Nega Tzarat V'Uva El Aharon HaKohen O El Echad Mibanav HaKohanim V'Ra'a Kohen Et HaNega Ba'or HaBasar, and so on. And Pasuk Hey again, V'Ra'a Kohen B'Yom HaShvi'i. So over here, we are not necessarily, this is almost according to all commentaries, not dealing with what is called Hansen's disease, which is leprosy. There's a leper colony not all that far from here. Those of you know the history of Jerusalem. So I know many people before Pesach who've wanted to check into that. Get a little downtime. Yeah, a little downtime. But as I said, that's called Hansen's disease, and that's something which is physical. And for the most part, the rabbis seem to be saying that what we're dealing with over here is not something which is physical, but rather something which is spiritual. The most important element that I want to point out is that it does not say that you go to a skin doctor, right? It doesn't say that you go to somebody who's an expert in terms of this area, that they have training in terms of understanding different things which could be on the skin. Oh, by the way, extension, or on the house, right? It doesn't say that you get somebody who knows how to deal with retivut or all kinds of colors which may be coming on your wall, but rather it's dealing with something which is a spiritual phenomena, and therefore it's the Kohen who's going to look at it. So over here, we have two different sections, and these two different sections, right? And by the way, you could say, oh, that's Tezri and that's Metzora, even though this section about the Metzora is really in Tezria. I mean, Metzora has more of it. We don't let go of that so quickly. But what we have over here is the situation of the woman who gives birth. We have the situation of the person who has tzarat, as I said, or the house that has tzarat. Clearly, I'll say it again, ritual laws. I mean, if I had to divide things, these are ritual laws. These are laws that have to do with tahara. I mean, if I were to think about the division of the Mishnah, these are not laws that will go in Zra'im. These are not laws that will go even in Mo'ed or Nashim and so on. Rather, these are laws that have to do with tahara. These are laws of tahara with implications in terms of kachim, in terms of dealing with korbanot as well. So, and therefore, if I were to think about the four sections of the Shulchan Aruch, there's nothing. Again, if I were to think about the Shulchan Aruch in terms of nidus, I look at the Yoredeya. Restate that. If I were to look at the laws of Nida, then I'd be looking at the laws of Yoredeya, because that has to do with things which are essentially spiritual. That's for the most part Yoredeya. But again, this disconnect between this is Yimei Tahara, and we're dealing with Tuma in terms of the Mishkan and not necessarily in terms of the husband. Full stop. So, as I'm reading, learning, reviewing Shtai Mikra Echa Targum, thinking, and it's really a question of listening to the words over here, that it occurred to me to explore something which you'll claim is really convenient, because what we're going to do is we're going to leave Vayikra completely, not just leave Tazria and Metzora, or not just Tazria and not just Metzora, but we're leaving Vayikra completely, and we're going to something which, depending on who you ask, may or may not be connected. But you'll see right away why it intrigues me, and that is source number three. Source number three is in Devarim, Parshat Shoftim. That itself could tell you something. Ki pale mimcha devar lemishpat, when something is beyond you in terms of law. So this is, by the way, now if I go back a second and think quickly, oh, if this is law, then this should probably be in Ezekiel. And if this is law, this should probably be in Chosha Mishpat, if you're dealing with law, right? Law, judges, and so on. But then he uses the following turn of phrase. Bin dam ladam, bin dim ladin, bin nega lenega. Now, let's just stop for a second as why this would intrigue me, because we have reference to two out of three. I mean, that's easy. Yeah. Two out of three. Dam ladam. I mean, by the way, that was the whole first discussion. Yeah. The difference dam ladam. And then we have nega lenega, and that was the whole continuation of discussion, which means, again, I don't have to justify why at least I want to explore this, because, first of all, it's a sound, the words, it's the sound of the thing. Secondly, of course, then you want to investigate and say, hold it, is there really a connection over here? But by the way, if that's not good enough, let's just read the next pasuk. Uvata ela kohanim halevi'im ve'ela shofeta she'avim imahim v'darashta v'yigidu lecha et dvar hamishpat. And it's over here that we have a slight disconnect and slight confusion on our part, because it says you should come to the kohanim halevi'im and the shofet. So now, which one is it? You know, if it's, we started, Ki pale mimcha devar lemishpat, mishpat is judgment, mishpat is the legal system, mishpat is the courtroom. But then, what's the dam and dam, and what's the nega and nega? What do these words mean? You know, to a certain extent, what we're really going to have to now do is just figure out what's pshat. Just what do these words mean, and what are they trying to tell us? So let's, again, pause there for a second. And then we have a second, perhaps interrelated, but perhaps independent problem. What does it mean when it says, Kohanim Levi'im Ve'el Shofet? I understand Devrei Mishpat to go to the Shofet. And again, if that's not enough, again, we focused on the Mishpat. Right? And by the way, those of us who don't recognize it, these are the verses which really give the authority to the high court. So this is really about what we would call today, in our vernacular, the Sanhedrin. This is the high court. So then what did we do? So what's the Dam B'Dam and what's the Nega V'Nega doing over here? And for that matter, what are the Kohanim and Levi'im doing over here? Because that also seems to be disconnected. Al Piyat Torah She'arucha V'al Mishpat HaShayom R'lacha Ta'aseh. And it's that double language that also is interesting. The Torah, which they'll rule, and the Mishpat, which they'll say. And by the way, I'm not leading you in any direction right now. I'm just saying that needs to be resolved. What exact, and doesn't actually even mean that we're going to resolve it. I'm just pointing out that that needs to be understood. Lo tasur min hadavar sheyagidu l'chayim min usmal. And that's the famous verse, lo tasur, that gives authority to the rabbis in order to create rabbinic laws. And by the way, it is possible that the different formulations that we saw a moment ago was between received law, and that could be rulings, that could be Torah, versus when they create new laws or new interpretations or new applications of law, so that could perhaps be a different terminology which is used. So we actually have two independent, interrelated problems. One, what does all of this mean on its own? Because it seems to be contradictory information or contradictory indications. And on the other hand, is this somehow connected to what we, you know, where we started today? And does one inform the other? And essentially, what then is the relationship between the two? So if we're talking, okay, if this section in Dvarim is a section that deals with the high court, why are we talking about ritual? What does the court have to do with ritual? We like to look for spiritual reasons, but no, this is not a legal issue. That's exactly the tension. Are we dealing with issues of ritual, or are we dealing with issues of law? If we're dealing with issues of law, then the place to go is the court. If we're dealing with issues of ritual, so then we need to find the right way to address ritual, which very much sounds like from when we started today, you go to the Kohen, which means, so which one is it? And then on top of that, I said, this may be an interrelated issue. What do you have the Kohen doing over here? Which may be part of the resolution, but we still have to work things out properly. If it's a question of, does this person have tzara'at, what in the world does that have to do with the court? Nothing to do with the court. See, you're overextending. I'll explain. It's okay. You're not the first. You're not even the first one this week. You're not even the first one this week in my class to overextend. I didn't even give the same class. The rabbis. Yeah, but that's not necessarily a legal issue. It's not necessarily a legal issue where there's legal recourse. The Gemara will tell you there's seven different reasons for tzara'at. But forget about tzara'at. Can we stay with the first case of the woman who gives birth? Dam l'dam. What does dam l'dam have to do with anyone? What does it do with the court system? Why are you bothering me? I'm kidding. But I'm saying that's exactly my question. So it just seems to be that there's counterindications. I didn't say contradiction. Counterindications over here, and we're not exactly sure. First of all, is this section related? I told you. Why did I feel, this is feeling, we're allowed to feel now. Why did I feel that there's a connection? It's because some of the words over here just seem to suggest that there's a suggestion. And now what we're doing is we're exploring it. And then we figured something out, that this section, even though it's very simple, right, a high court. But I don't know how much you know to what extent the high court is a problem that it doesn't exist and to what extent it was a fear in the very early years pre-state and also once the state was created, that the rabbis would try to create a Sanhedrin, which, by the way, could solve many, many issues. The major people that were against it were people who were, for lack of a better term, I'll call them ultra-Orthodox, because they didn't want anyone to think that such power actually existed. So I could pick on the Chazon Ish for a moment. If you want, I'll point you towards the 1,000-page biography which Benny Brown wrote on the Chazon Ish. It's in Hebrew. Enjoy. I don't know if it was translated. And there are a couple of sections over there which would very much show how the Chazon Ish was fearful of it. I'll tell you one, maybe two. In the very early 1940s, a question arose. You know some of the background of it. And that is that you had a group of people known as the Mir Yeshiva. The Mir Yeshiva escaped. Where did they escape from?
China.
Mir. They escaped from Mir. This was like a trick question. Where did the Mir Yeshiva escape from? They escaped from Mir. Okay, Mir. No, exactly. By the way, and people can't get this right either. Where did they go? Oh, there's a place called Mir. Yes, there's a place called Mir in Belarus. I think that's where it would be called today. And they escaped from Mir, and they ended up going a number of places. And they were in Kobe, Japan, and they ended up in Shanghai, and they weren't the only people there. I mean, there was a whole group of people, but part of the problem that came up was the question regarding the international dateline, which means where is the dateline and what do you do about things like Shabbat? There were a group, maybe even all of them, not sure how big, who did have a possibility of getting out of Japan and coming to America, but they would have crossed the official dateline right around Yom Kippur, And therefore, they decided, rather than 2 days Yom Kippur, to wait. Of course, they waited, and the next time that they were able to come was already after December 7th. And some of you were old enough to remember what happened on that day. So therefore, that never worked out, and they ended up getting stuck there for years. But that was part of the background. So different people that were there wrote to different rabbis, just like today. Everyone wrote to different rabbis. The Chazon Ish was asked, and other Rav Tkachinsky, Rabbi Herzog, and others. So Rav Herzog, who was the chief rabbi at the time, said, let's gather all the rabbis together, and let's sit and discuss this, and let's give one answer. And the Chazon, and he sent someone to the... He sent someone to the Chazon Ish to invite him as well, if I'm not mistaken, and this is in a different biography, in the biography of Rav Gorin. Rav Gorin was the one who was... He was a younger yeshiva student at the time, and he was the one who was sent to the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish smiled and said, absolutely not, I'm not coming, I'm not joining any. Because he did not want there to be some kind of an official body, and rather what he did is he gave a ruling. He just wrote a ruling before they had their meeting, and what ended up is like three different rabbis gave three different opinions, and even the dateline, therefore, so where's the dateline? There's no agreement on the dateline. And the Chazon Ish gave a very funny ruling. I mean, his dateline is a total zigzag because he thinks that any landmass should be included, so therefore he has to bend it around landmasses, and others did not necessarily agree with that, and others didn't agree where the dateline should be. And don't worry, only roughly 25% of the world is under a machloket regarding which day it is. So, but it's only 25%. The other 75% were pretty good, but 25% of the world... people don't agree. And by the way, just in case you say, well, why don't we just follow the international dateline? Well, maybe we should. But that also works with a certain assumption, and that is that Greenwich, England is the center of the world. Now, I don't know what the dateline is, but I know that Greenwich, England is not the center of the world. But maybe there's no such thing. Maybe it's completely artificial. And just in case you want to actually think about this a little bit more, then look up about Samoa. I'm not sure, Samoa, Western Samoa. They've moved the dateline over the years. Which means they were on one side, they were the last country, they actually celebrated July 4th twice one year in the 1800s, and then they decided they didn't want to be the very end of the world, they wanted the beginning of the world, and they shifted. And they moved a couple years ago. So therefore, in case you think the whole thing is real, and there's also a wonderful short story from Edgar Allan Poe called Three Sundays in a Week, so you can read that as well if you want great insight. And that was before there was a dateline. Let me get back to the point. And by the way, the Chazon Ish had another point. When the chief rabbinate after the Holocaust said, let's make a day to commemorate the Holocaust, he said, no, who are we to make such days? But it came back to issues of authority. Because once we start thinking we have authority, then who knows what we can do with the authority? And there's a lot of good things we can do with the authority as well. But then we're trusting a group that a lot of people don't necessarily trust today, and that's the chief rabbinate. And I'll just give muster to our entire community, everybody extended, is that we have not invested in training people to become rabbis, judges, dayanim, and rabbis of cities, and so on. And then we complain to the situation, but we've completely abandoned it instead of sending our children to medical school and accountants and dental school and whatever else it is that we became. So you can't have it both ways. Either we have to invest and raise our children to be able to take these positions, or be quiet. Silence. Okay, let's continue. So this section has to do with the High Court, but again, we're not really sure what to do with it. The Ramban says, and this is a longer Ramban, this is not the whole thing, Ukfi Pshuto, I hope you realize, I should have put three dots before, it's in the middle of a sentence. Ukfi Pshuto, Ben Dam Ladam, Ben Inyan Ritzichot, El Dine Mamon, Opetza V'Chavura, Kol Divrei Revolt, Asheyu B'Sharecha, which means essentially he's saying that this whole section is only dealing with legal issues. And the Ramban says, yeah, that has to be pshat. Now, this is wonderful what the Ramban just now did. He solved all of our problems. Dam l'dam doesn't really mean what you thought it meant. And remember, I said that, you know, I'm hearing these words and saying, hold it, this is pretty similar to where we're up to in Tazria. And he's saying, no, don't do that. Right? The Ramban is saying, stop. Don't do that. This is all legal. How do I know it's legal? This is the legal section. This is dealing with the courts. So if it's dealing with the courts, then by definition, all the terms which are used here are dealing with legal issues. And therefore, what we're dealing with are damages which may come from murder, stealing, we're dealing with wounds and so on and such things. Right? Okay, we'll leave that and continue. there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin which takes these words, bin dam ladam, bin dam nida, dam leda, dam ziva. Exactly. Which means the Gemara did what I said. That's what it sounds like. The Gemara is saying, yeah, bin dam ladam, different types of dam which could exist, which could have different laws. Bin dim ladin, bin dinin afashot, dinin mamanot, dinin makot. Which is interesting, because now we just went to the legal system. Mak, right? Bein negel anaga, bein nige adam, nige batim, nige begadim, right? Which means we just now went back to ritual. So now make up your mind. And then, divrei, things which come out of verbalization, elu hacharimim v'arachim v'haktashot, which, by the way, are wonderful, because that's also back in Vayikra again. Those kinds of things, where you make vows and therefore create holiness. Ribot zo hashka'at sota, which, by the way, is ritual. Barifat agila egla v'tarat mitzora. Bisharecha zeleket shircha v'peya. Now, again, I'm just going to pause here for 1 second. We'll read a little more. V'kam to me beit din, v'alita me melamed shabeit mikdash gavoa me eretz yisrael, eretz yisrael gavoa me kol arzot, ela makom, melamed shemakom goreim. Those last couple of words, makom goreim, is something we're going to have to come back to. But this Gemara in Sanhedrin had no problem interpreting these words against the Ramban. I mean, you realize that's a little funny what I'm saying. The Ramban is saying, let's read the words in context. It is about the court. Therefore, everything has to be fit into somehow a legal or a court considerations. And the Gemara is saying, well, you know, what do these words mean? And therefore, it's taking it out of the legal and over to the ritual. And if we'll be honest, most of what the Gemara just now said was actually ritual, which is pretty interesting. There's Yerushalmi here in source 6, which I want to come back to. Now, what was the other problem? Again, if we're going to go back to that section with the court system, we also had a Kohanim and a Leviim. So what are they doing there? Make up your mind. If it's a court system, then it's a court system. So Rashi says a Kohanim Leviim, a Kohanim Sheyatzu Mishevet Levi. By the way, I am source number 7, the bottom of the page, I hope. And of course, I mean, it's a little actually hard to understand what else it could have been. The Ibn Ezra is, by the way, difficult. He writes HaKohanim HaLeviim, source number 8, Kashe Pirashti, which is wonderful because he doesn't tell you where. I actually had to look at various editions of the Ibn Ezra until I was able to find out what he was referring to. And just to give credit where credit is due, I ended up finding it by looking in Al HaTorah, and not in the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, it had a footnote, and it took me to someplace else. The English edition, English translation, had a better footnote that took me to the correct place, which we'll see in a second. In source number 9, this is right before Matan Torah, V'atem tiuli mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. So you'll be a country, a whole nation of Kohanim. Here the Ibn Ezra writes, "Memlechet Kohanim al dati ki kol kohen shabimikra, hu kimo shamash." That means somebody who serves. Kohen doesn't mean that you are a Kohen. It means somebody who serves. So therefore, it could have used the term HaKohanim. By the way, it's a little strange though. Kohanim Leviim kasher pirashti. It means somebody who serves. By the way, the Rashbam goes in the same direction. In 11, Mamlechet Kohanim Sarim, Kamo Ubnei David Kohanim. They served. These are people who are in public service. Source 12 of Chaim Paltiel, Ubata Ela Kohanim Leviim, Pir Shaloyavo Lebeitin Achirim, Shayu Birushalayim, Rak Shiavo Loto Beitin Hasamuch La Kohanim, Vayit Lishkada Gazit. Now that already is much more interesting because it's saying is that there's some kind of an interconnection between those who deal with rituals and those who deal with legal issues. And remember we saw in the Gemara it says Hamakom Goreim. No, it's a special court. Which court is it? It's the High Court. What's the High Court? Why is it special? Or what even creates the High Court? The High Court only functions when it's adjacent to where the ritual is being done, which means instead of there being these two absolutely independent parts of Judaism, there needs to be something a little bit more connected, and that seems to be the way that he's reading the verses. We'll continue, but don't ignore this, because we're going to come back. Rashi, going, maybe we could have or should have started with Rashi, ki paleh, which means when you don't know something. When you don't know something, it's hidden from you. There's something which has escaped you. You don't know the law. Bein dam ladam, bein dam tamei ladam tahor. So now Rashi, unlike the Ramban, who try to push everything, Rashi's, yeah, the ritual. Bein din ladin, bein din zakai ladin chayav. Legal. Bein nega lenaga, bein nega tamei lenega tahor. Ritual. So again, this is really interesting because, you see, Rashi is reading it the way that, again, that I had heard it right away. And now you realize that the Rav Chaim Paltiel who we saw before, it's not so far from what Rashi was telling us, but you also realize that Rashi took that line straight from the Gemara, and Rashi is reading the Gemara that we saw before, right into the text over here, and it was really the Ramban who's saying, yeah, the Gemara is nice, but that's not pshat, it can't be pshat, because what in the world are we doing? Is this a legal system or a ritual system? The Rashbam, Ben Dam Ladan, Lefi Pshuto, and now you'll realize that the Ramban that we saw before, it's coming from the same kind of a tradition, Bein dam ladam lefi pshuto, bein ritzicha leritzicha, bein shogeg lemezid. How much blood do you have on your hands? Bein dam ladam. Right? Do you have blood on your hands or not? That's the way that he's reading it. I'll read it again. Bein dam ladam lefi pshuto, bein ritzicha leritzicha, bein shogeg lemezid. Yeah. So how much blood? Mishpat. Right. How much blood do you have on your hands? Is it something that was done deliberately or something which was done accidentally? Bein din ladin, dinei momonot, nega tzarat. So it's interesting because the Rashbam tries to take it away up from the ritual, but he can't because the word nega was a little bit, you can't, you're stuck. Ibn Ezra, and by the way, very often, if you don't know this, the Ibn Ezra will follow the Rashbam. If you didn't know it, he was very influenced by the Rashbam. Ki yipale, we'll skip a little. Im hashofet yidaber bavoriot edut shneim lamitamed v'zepirish bein dam ladam bein dam naki ladam chayav. And same thing. You know, this is something which is legal. Bein din ladin b'mamon bein nega lenaga kimo pet savachavura. So he just now went further than the Rashbam did. So what's nega v'nega? It has to do when you were struck. So it has to do with two people fighting. One hits the other one. One has a wound. The other one has a wound. And now the judge has to get involved and pay damages. So essentially what the Ibn Ezra just now succeeded in doing is completely taking this out of any issue of ritual and taking it straight into the legal system. The Bechor Shor, also from the Balei HaTosfot. Again, this would also follow the Rashbam. Bein dam ladam, bein dam nida ladam leida, ladam zava. And you realize what he did. He's influenced by Rashi, influenced by the Gemara as well. Bein din ladin, bein din imamun, ladin imakot, ladin imfashot, bein neg lenaga, bein nega adam lenage begadim. You know, straight off back to the ritual again. And essentially what he's doing here, he's just really following the Gemara. So there's nothing else which is extraordinary over here. Rabbeinu Miyuchos in source 17, and we're going to see soon where this is coming from. Ela Kohanim, mitzvah bebeitin, shiyu bo Kohanim v'leviyim. V'mein bo kasher, shenemer o el shafet mikol makom. So he's reading the verse that there's a preference in any court to have people who are Kohanim. It's a preference. Or Leviyim, it's a preference. Is it absolute? Does it, if you don't have it, does it? Yeah, it still counts, but it's a preference. So when it said, again, I just want to go back and read that verse one more time. When it says, Uvat ela kohanim levim ve'el shofet, so the preference is in the court is to have kohanim levim. But if not, then you can still have a shofet, and those were not necessarily two different realms. And again, he's taking everything into the realm of the legal and away from the ritual. Source 18 is a book called the Ravid HaZahav. Being that you may not have heard of it, I gave you a little biography, and that is Rav Dov Ber ben Rav Yehuda Leib Trivish, born around 1730, during the time of the Vilna Gaon. He was among the most prominent Rabbanim in Vilna and a Talmud of the Gaon. From the year 1766, he served as one of the leading judges on the rabbinic court of Vilna. So, but by the way, I always question when they say, oh, this person's a student of the Vilna Gaon. I question how much anyone was a student of the Vilna Gaon. We have no records of him ever having yeshiva, of ever teaching, of ever. The Vilna Gaon sat and learned by himself. And every now and then people would listen. Every now and then there were people who would consult and he would talk. The great student of Chai Velazhin, I believe he only met with him once or twice a year and came with a whole list of questions and then got his answers. So I don't know how much anybody ever really learned with him. The Vilna Gaon was the first official Kolo student, and he was supported. He had a family foundation that was supporting him, for one of his ancestors had left money for him. And he never had an official position. He was not the rabbi, he was not the dayan, he was not the Rosh Hashiva. He sat and he learned, but this is somebody who apparently had some kind of relationship with the Vilna Gaon. And let's take a look at what he says. One is, he says, we'll start the first one, Pasuk Chet, Bein Dam L'Dam. B'Perek Chanech Nachin, Perek Daf Pei Vav, Bein Dam Hayarog Shemetameh, Akavya V'Chachamim Metarim, says, look at Nida Daf Yotet, Uvi Yerushalmi Shadiktiku Kein Midalok Tiv Bein Dam Vidam. So let's, I told you that we skipped that Yerushalmi, so I want to now come back to that Yerushalmi, which was in source number 6. This is a Mishnah, it starts with a Mishnah in Masechet Nida, and it says that there are different colors. Now, this is not the right time and place, and I'm not going into this more than necessary right now, but there is a certain training to be able to know what types of colors or hafrashot, I would say, are considered to be Nida and which are not. And the Mishnah tells you that there are different chamisha damim tmeim. The Gemara then continues, again, this is the Yerushalmi, uminayin sheish damim tmeim v'yesh damim tahorim. How do you know that there are some shades of which are considered to be tamei? Again, you want me to say impure, that create a situation of what we would call impurity. V'yesh damim tahorim. Rav Chama bar Yosef b'shem Rabbi Hoshai yiktiv ki palemim chadavar l'mishpat bein dam. The dam, which means that, again, by the way, it's completely ritual without any question, and it's saying, no, there are different types of dam. By the way, who was the greatest authority on such issues in the last 100 years? Yeah, I know you don't know. It's okay. It's not your fault. What? It's not even a trick question. No, just someone you never heard of. it makes it somewhat challenging. No, but the, on occasion, I've told people that are training and they've learned and they rule in such areas, and I'll ask them, which Masorah do you have? Like what? And by the way, right then they have a little bit of difficulty. So if you look at the very bottom of page 4, and I can actually hold up a picture. You don't have this. This is a picture of the fellow. He looks like an Orthodox Jew. Yeah. In the very bottom of page 4, you see there's somebody whose name, and you will now admit that you never heard of him, never. Rabbi Shimshon Aaron Polanski, known as the Teplicker Rav. Never heard of him. The Teplicker. So you never heard of him, right? You never heard of him. He was a great posek in Russia and then in Jerusalem. We also served as the rabbi of the Beit Yisrael neighborhood, and he was revered by all the greats of the generation for his knowledge, extraordinary genius, and Torah. It is known that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank would not rule on serious questions without receiving his opinion. And of Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook stated that he was the number one scholar in Jerusalem. He was known as a great expert in the laws of Nida, and his Masorah and rulings in the laws of Ktamim and Marot have influenced many generations afield. Most of the rabbis of Jerusalem and some of the greatest arbiters, meaning poskim, in recent generations studied under him, including Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Yosef Shlomo Yashiv, Rav Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, Rav David Youngreis, Rav Shaul Levi Vosner, Rav Vadi Yosef, and others. All of those people, because you heard of all of those guys, you never heard of him. All of them have the Masorah, which is known as the Masorah of the Teplicker. So I have this Masorah from two different of the students of his. And that is the gold standard in terms of being able to decide on such laws. And yeah, you can pick on your daughter-in-law now and ask if she's ever heard of the Teplicker.
I'm going to call her up. Tell her to listen to you.
It's fascinating that all of these people consider the Teplicker to be the again, Rav Cook said he was the biggest, I think the term Rav Cook actually used was the biggest lamdan in Eretz Yisrael. But he was the most important posek. He wouldn't take a job from the Rabbanut because the guys in the Ada kind of leveraged him. He was the Rav of Beit Yisrael. One of the little kids who grew up in Beit Yisrael at the time was a little kid named Ovadi Yosef, who called, I have the exact term over here, he calls him Aluf Na'ori, the champion of my youth. That's what he calls the Teplicker. So again, it's very interesting. There's actually a story, if you go looking for it, you'll find that Rav Ovadia, he gives him credit, the Teplaker, for the fact that he actually stayed in yeshiva and became a rabbi. But that's aside from the fact that all of the great rabbis who wanted to become poskim, they all sat with him and they learned with him and they watched how he would rule and they received his Mesorah and they followed him. And that's the funny thing. So here you have a little poor immigrant rabbi, right? That's what he was. But all the great rabbis knew that this is the person that you need to learn with. So therefore, that's the reason why I had to stress this today, because nobody's ever heard of him. So at least a couple of you now will have heard of him. And some of you even now have seen the picture. Good. Let's continue, because the Yerushalmi was interesting, because the Yerushalmi actually is using our verse to tell you that there is Dam Tameh and Dam Tahar, that there's two different, that there is required a ruling, but that ruling is ritual, and that is, well, let's stay with that a second, because it's not as simple as I'm saying it. Let's continue, because that today, you know, you don't need a Kohen for that. Kohen is the rest of the process, but who actually can give the ruling on that? But let's continue. But so he quotes the Yerushalmi. We're still with the Vilna Gaon's perhaps student, right? The Ravid HaZahav. And so he quotes the Yerushalmi, and he also then continues and says, right, with Parashat Tazria, Eitzel, right, again, he's going to Adam L'Adam, V'ayin, Parsha Metzora, Eitzel Kenega, Neger, Nirali. So again, he's saying that this is not dealing with the way that some people wanted to argue, that they're dealing with actually killing and so on and so forth. No, because this is Ben Dam, L'Dam, Ben Nega, L'Nega, and therefore it very much, you have the ritual over here interdispersed together with the legal. And as I said, that's interesting. And Pasuk Ted, El Kohenim V'Levi'in, Parshat Arba Mitot, Daf Nun Bet. And the only thing disappointed is that we had to wait till him to get this reference to take a look over there. Kolzman Sheish Kohen Danin Dine Nefeshot. So that is really interesting, that this connection between the Kohanim and Leviim is much sharper than we thought. I'll explain more in a moment. In source 19, if we already quoted somebody who was perhaps a student of the Vilna Gaon, so why not just quote the Vilna Gaon? So that's in source 19, that Deret Eliyahu. Ubata Ela Kohanim Leviim Mitzvat Beit and Shel Kohanim Leviim Yoshvim Bahem. Right? So again, something that we've already seen, it is preferable, there is a mitzvah that on the court, there needs to be Kohanim and Leviim as well. So now let's try to understand, when he told us, again, the Ravid HaZahav told us to take a look in the Gemara, so I know why people can miss this Gemara, because it's like in the middle of a story, which was like a really unfortunate incident, and so story number 20, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Bet, it says, Imrate Bat Tali Bat Kohen Shezinta Havai. There was once a story of a woman who was a Bat Kohen, gives you her name, and it says that she had done something which was theoretically punishable. Akva Rav Chama Bartuv Yachav Lizmurt Visrifa. And this rabbi goes and he executes her. By the way, this is all completely bizarre. Where's the court? Where's everything else? And this is in the middle of Bava. Rav Yosef, Taba Tarta, you were only mistaken about two things. One is the way that you killed her. Ta b'drav matna, v'ta b'detanya. Uvata l'kohenim l'vion l'el shofet ashebi maheim, bizman sheyesh kohen, yesh mishpat. Bizman she'ein kohen, ein mishpat. Which means capital cases can only exist when there are Kohanim, when the Beit HaMikdash exists. Now, by the way, this is all really interesting because we do know some other interconnections between them. Like, for example, somebody kills a shogig, they go running off to an Eir Miklat until the Kohen Gadol dies. Okay, then what if there's no Kohen Gadol anymore? Meaning, what happened? These different systems have some kind of interrelationship. It's as if you need the Beit HaMikdash and the Kohanim and that whole world of Chesed, which is created by having the Beit HaMikdash, and then only then can you have the legal system giving out its legal punishments as well. So he's saying to this guy, this rabbi who gave this punishment to this Bat Kohen, he goes, you killed her the wrong way. And what are you talking about killing people? You can't go killing people. This is like completely, you know, malpractice in the worst possible way. The Rambam in Source 21 in Hilchot Sanhedrin, Right. So mitzvah liyopit Sanhedrin gedola kohenim v'leviim shenema v'ata ala kohenim ha'leviim. So the Rambam goes down and rules. Yeah, that's what this pasuk means. This pasuk, by saying the kohen and leviim, is not telling you about some kind of interrelationship between ritual and spirit, ritual and legal or judicial. You say no. The judicial system needs to have the kohenim as well. Then the Rambam in Hilchot Sanhedrin, Perek Yudalit, source 22, he says, "Ein danin dinei nefashot ella b'pnei habayit, v'hu shi'a beitin agadol sham b'lishka shebe mikdash." You can only have capital cases when the Beit HaMikdash exists. Shenema b'zakei mamreis, it says, "Lo b'lita shmur la kohen, u'mipi ha'shmua lamdu shebizman shi'ish kohen makriv al gabe ha'mizbeach, yesh dinei nefashot v'hu shi'a." So it's interesting, whatever the Rambam means by mipia shmua, generally that means that it's a Torah Shebal Peh and not a Torah Shebichtav, but it's interesting because the Gemara was claiming that that's actually Torah Shebichtav. I'm not getting into that more than I just now did, but the Rambam is understanding that references ela kohenim v'leviim and vel shofet, you cannot have a shofet unless you have kohenim v'leviim. Which means these two systems need to, I'm not going to even say balance one another, they need to coexist. If they don't coexist, you can't have one without the other. And that's really finally going to take us to Rav Hirsch, because I think Rav Hirsch really is the one who's going to articulate this. Now, just as a general comment, Rav Hirsch is great in Vayikra. Rav Hirsch is great when it comes to Korbanot. Rav Hirsch is great in Shemot when it comes to the whole symbolism involving the Mishkan and the Kelim and so on. Which means, you know, if Chassidish Rebbe said the same things, we wouldn't take it as seriously. But when Rav Hirsch says it, so, you know, he's a Yekka, so people take it far more seriously. But he's very, very good when it comes to interpreting symbolism. And listen to the way that he describes this process. Again, he's here in Devarim. Danim v'beit ha-din ha-gadol ha-yoshev b'makom ha-merkaz shel mikdash ha-torah v'hem manikim le-beitin et hasamchut ha'elyona v'chida. It is the existence of the Beit HaMikdash which gives the authority to the Sanhedrin to be able to exist. Biyadav hufkada ha'kabala v'ha'parshanut ha'muskemet shel Torah. And in their hands were placed the traditions and the ability to pass over the accepted teachings of the Torah. V'kol takana leman kiyum Torah ha-Torah ke-halacha nimsira l'achrato ha-sofit. And they were also given the ability of interpreting, making applications in order to make sure that the things in the Torah is going to be relevant. L'fichach ha'am b'chlalo v'chen chachmei Torah shebikir bo chayvim l'kabel da'ato l'tzarech halacha ma'asit. And again, that goes back to the authority of the High Court. Bein dam l'dam, bein dam tamei l'dam tahar. Bedin ladin, bedin zakai ladin chayav. Again, and that's part of our problem that we have these two different realms. You know, which one is this? Is dealing with rituals, dealing with legal decisions. Ubenega lenega, benega tame le nega tahor. And Rashi did all this based upon the Gemara. Reverse quotes. Hare elu shloshah tchumim haikariim. Now look at the way that he now moves over and he conceptualizes it. These three realms. Sheyacholot arer behem safek. Where we can have doubts as far as what to do. B'yachas l'psak halacha. Issa v'heter. So now he just now took dam v'dam to issues of I'm going to call it ritual for the moment, but it's issa v'heter in the sense of what's allowed and what's not allowed, which for our world is actually much more yerideya than anything else. Dine mamunot b'nefashot, which is ben din ladim, which is really for our, in our world it's choshim mishpat. Tuma v'tahara. So this becomes the laws which are, again, to a very great extent don't exist today. We'll continue the next paragraph. Uvata ela kohenim v'leviim ve'ela shofet. Kfar hizkarnu b'pasuk ha-kodem et ha-kesher ha-pnimi shebein ha-sanhedrin le-beit ha-mikdash. Already mentioned in the last paragraph the connection between the existence of the Sanhedrin and the Beit HaMikdash. Ha-kesher hazeh bo lidei bitui gam b'tziruf ha-kohenim le-beit ha-gadol. One of the elements of this connection is the fact that we need kohanim to be on the Beit Din as well. Because both of them serve, let's look at the words carefully, they have the same agenda, and the same truths. nimtzar lekohanim lemishmeret, the authoritative text of Torah Shebichtav of the Torah is there in the Beit HaMikdash under the watchful eye of the Kohanim. They are the protectors of Torah Shebichtav. And therefore was placed near by the Aron. And the Sanhedrin are the ones, or the authority, that they're the ones who then pass on the Torah Shebal Peh. Now that is such an interesting way of looking at this interconnection, interdependence, by saying these are the people who are in charge of the Torah Shebichtav, and these are the people who are in charge of the Torah Shebal Peh. And it says, right? Shakohen, begam kohen gadol, ein lo kishul atzmo kol samchut b'divrei Torah, elohu nechshav ki echad ha'am biyachus lo hara Torah. Right? And the kohen gadol comes to rule. He has no more authority than anybody else does. I actually, you know, want to pause here in a moment. I just want to check if there's anything else that I really want to see over here. I want to read to you really. You don't have this in front of you. I want to read to you a really interesting halacha, which the Rambam states, and this is in Hilchot Tumat Tzara'at. So, of course, you realize that that's where we have to be looking today, in Hilchot Tumat Tzara'at. So, he writes as follows. This is Perek Tet Halacha Bet. Afa pisha kol ksherim l'ra'ot nega'im ha'tum'a b'tara'at t'lo'a b'kohen. Even though anybody could observe and look, the question is what that means, look at the nega'im, the statement that something is tameh, or the statement that something is tahor, is completely dependent exclusively upon the kohen. And he's about to tell you something which I think really needs to be processed and understood, but this is actually the issue. Ketzad, how so? Kohen she'enu yodei el ro'ot, a kohen who has no idea, doesn't understand the rules, right? And it goes on and it continues. And then once the Kohen says this, he's skiravu, and so on, which means up to the Kohen has to say it. But filu haya Kohen katan o shote, hachacham omer lo, v'hu machlit o poter o serger. Which means he's saying is that this is total ritual given in the hands of the Kohen. The same way that only a Kohen could do certain things in the Beit HaMikdash. Again, I don't know a better way of expressing this, of saying, look how much this is ritual, that even if the Kohen doesn't understand, doesn't know, he needs, meaning to go back to this interdependence, he needs the Chacham, who has the Mesorah, who knows the Halacha, who's standing, right adjacent to him, because he's the one who's in the Sanhedrin, and he comes over and he teaches him, but it's the Kohen's mouth. He has to come and say that it is okay or it is not okay. Why? Because this is ritual. But the knowledge is coming from over here. But the Chacham could be the greatest Chacham in the world, but he can't do it without the Kohen. And then it's stressed, even with the Kohen, even a Katan. No, but he's still a Kohen. So again, that's really interesting, because it's not a question of knowledge. Therefore, he said, even a Shotet, it's not a question of knowledge. It's a question is that this is a Kohen, and the Kohen has the job, and only the Kohen could do it. Aval imaya kohen ro'ev v'some chalatzmo asur lo lerot nega mikol nagim ad sheyorenu rabo biyabaki b'kol enegaim. And even a kohen thinks he knows, he has to sit and learn. He has to learn the Mesorah. He learns it from the chacham, from his teacher, mi rabo, and then he's able to do this. So it's fascinating. Again, this point of this interdependence. I just want to, kind of make sure that we understand what the takeaway is over here. In Judaism, we have a judicial system. And the judicial system is one that has to keep the peace. It has to create a community and create, by extension, a society. And they're the ones who are going to rule on all kinds of laws, which, again, you need laws sometimes in order to create a society which lives in peace. It is really interesting that instead of saying, well, no, we got the religious things, and that's in the shul, and that's in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's all like ritual things, and then we have the other things, which are the practical legal considerations, no, they need to be in the same place. Not only need to be in the same place, it is preferable to have some of those people who are the Kohanim and the Levim, have them in the Sanhedrin as well. But then on the other hand, the people in the Sanhedrin, they're going to need to teach the people who are the Kohanim in order to be able to get the right answers, the right understanding at times, because there really is this interesting interrelationship between the two. So therefore, even that formulation that maybe initially we thought was somewhat jarring, because hold up, so it sounds like almost like doesn't make sense, because that sentence doesn't make sense, because here we have ritual, here we have legal, and here we have ritual again. How does this even work? And the Kohanim, and then the Shofet, how does this work? And the answer is yes, that's exactly the point, which means don't think that Sefer Vayikra is off by itself. Don't think that all of these laws have nothing. No, even the Kohen is giving these rulings, he's still going to need the Chacham in order to be able to receive the tradition and know to how to give those rulings. And these things are ultimately far more interconnected. The Rav Hirsch's point about that the Kohanim are the one, at least symbolically, who protect the Torah Shebichtav was really interesting in terms of that's where the Torah is, the authoritative Torah, but it's the Sanhedrin are the ones who are protecting the Torah Shebal Peh, and they're the ones who are keeping it alive by making applications. But are we ever going to divorce between Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebal Peh? Of course we can't. Of course that these things are interrelated, and therefore it becomes all the more interesting. But we saw along the way, those who wanted insist, no, this whole section is a legal section, and they try to force all of the words. No, Dam Ladan is, you know, killing on purpose, killing by accident, right? Negev and Nega, no, that's about hurting somebody. That's, you know, you hit somebody, you cause damage on their person. And those who said, no, this is Vayikra coming alive, and it's right here in Dvarim, and the legal section, because ultimately you can't have full authority really at all. I mean, again, I'm not sure how much I'm stressing this. You, according to many, there is no Sanhedrin unless there is a Beit HaMikdash. There is no Sanhedrin unless it's sat in the right place. And therefore, the fear that some people, oh, they'll make a new Sanhedrin. No, they really can't make a new Sanhedrin. It does not have that authority. And maybe that's also what they were not convinced that other people would listen. But you can't have a Sanhedrin unless that, you know, there's something else sitting adjacent on the Temple Mount. The two of those things need to come together. You need there to be that balance, and you can't have one without the other. And I'll say this again, because I say it all the time. I think there are many people, when, you know, Tisha B'Av rolls around, they say, listen, I don't really connect that much to the Beit HaMikdash, the Korbanot. I really don't even know what that world is, to miss it. But we very much should be missing the legal system. We very much should be living. Any time that you're going to hear somebody say, well, you know, is that kosher or not? Well, he thinks it's kosher, but he doesn't think it's kosher. They use the Erev, they don't use the Erev. This mikvah is okay. No, it's not okay. Anytime you hear these kinds of arguments, realize that if we had a Beit Din Gadol, those arguments wouldn't exist, because the Beit Din Gadol would give the ruling, and that ruling is the bottom line. And therefore, when you think about the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, some of the Sinat Chinam is all of these arguments that take place. And then you realize, but if we had this, we'd have less Sinat Chinam. But the problem is Sinat Chinam destroyed it. And now you see how much these things are interrelated.